You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome to the Houston Mayoral Symposium, a joint production between the Houston Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and Intercom Radio Houston. I'm Sarah Frazier, Market Manager for Intercom Houston, and I'm here today with Dr. Laura Murillo, President and CEO of the Houston Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and Mayor Sylvester Turner, the incumbent in the mayoral runoff election to take place on December 14th. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, Sarah, thank you for hosting us here yet again. And we always start off by saying that the chamber does not endorse candidates. We're out here saying, get out and vote, get out and vote. And we support the winner. We have been working with you. Thank you so much, Mayor Turner, over the years. It's been a great partnership. There's still so much more to do. People want to know, you know, one of the obvious things and that is on folks' mind is, of course, the financial, you know, situation with the city.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've got, you know, some great ideas. But again, welcome and thanks for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, I would tell you, the city's come a long ways. When I came into office 4 years ago, the city was facing its largest budgetary deficit, $160 million. 5 months later, we balanced the books without laying off one single employee. When I came into office 4 months ago, the city was facing the largest pension debt in its history, $8.2 billion, costing the city $1 million a day, and all three credit rating agencies had gone thumbs down. 4 years later, as we sit here, that $8.2 billion has been cut in half to $4.03. Mm-hmm. The $1 million is no more. All three credit rating agencies have given us a thumbs up. And Bloomberg and Associates cites the city of Houston as a model across the country on how to deal with pension challenges. Mm-hmm. The unemployment in the city of Houston is the lowest in June, July since 1981. More people are working in the city than ever before. So from a financial point of view, the city is in much, much better shape than it was 4 years ago.
Yeah, great.
Thank you. During Hurricane Harvey,
yes,
several of us actually slept in this room right here, keeping everyone informed, helping to evacuate people. You came on the air with us several times.
I remember.
I appreciate that very much. It's one of the hardest things that I've ever done, and I'm sure you as well.
Yes.
During the State of the City in May, you said that HUD still hadn't released the finances or all of the funds to do much of what you felt needed to be done to fix all of the issues. Where do we stand now? And what do you want to do moving forward?
We're making progress. It's going to be the recovery from Harvey, just like in any major natural disaster, will take years. It's not done in 1 or 2 years. It takes years. But I will tell you, three of the four cities' top major infrastructure projects have now been approved by the federal government, by FEMA, and fully funded. So, for example, the 10 spillway gates in Kingwood, a $49 million project. More homes were flooded in Kingwood from water being released from Lake Conroe than water falling from the sky. That project has been approved. That's their number one project. In the Inwood Forest, Northwest Houston, we're taking that golf course, 229 acres, turning it into the largest detention basin. It will hold more water than the Astrodome. That's a $49 million project. That's been approved, fully funded. The North Canal project that's been talked about in this city since the 1940s is finally going to get done. It represents the largest stormwater project in the state of Texas. It's $131 million. It is where Buffalo Bayou and White Oaks converge. It will take the lower portion of downtown, the theater district, out of the floodplain, benefit the Heights area, North Main. That's a major, major project. That one has been fully, has been approved and fully funded. The fourth major project is in West Houston. That's like a $60 million project involving TERS 17. That's on the drawing board, and I anticipate that one being done. In the Westbury community, for example, the city has purchased the old Shell Research Facility. That will provide 13 to 15 acres of additional detention at Willow Waterhole. That's their number one project in the area, and we're moving forward on that. We have increased the number of stormwater projects in every city council member's districts. 3 to 5 years from now, I suspect when you look back at the city of Houston, you will see a city that's much more resilient, much more sustainable, can withstand heavy rainfalls than the city that exists today. Now, we're still waiting for the $4.3 billion in infrastructure dollars from HUD. That was approved by the feds some 18 months ago. It's still waiting on the state's action plan. And so those dollars are not going to be available until sometime next year. Those are the HUD infrastructure dollars. Okay. So we're still waiting, you know, but in the meantime, we're working with the $2.5 billion that the Harris County voters approved a year ago,
right,
leveraging that with what we call Rebuild Houston. I call it Build It Forward dollars. Okay. So we're moving forward on a number of projects, but I'm pleased to say that three of the four top major infrastructure projects have been approved and are now fully funded. And those projects are slated to be constructed and built within the next 3 years.
So a follow-up to that,
sure.
The county, Harris County, there seems to be a lot more interaction with Judge Emmett at the time and now with Judge Hidalgo.
Yes.
Certainly necessary and crucial. Talk to us about that and the difference that it's making or has made in securing these funds.
Quite frankly, it makes a huge difference because flooding doesn't stop at the city of Houston boundary. Neither really does it stop at Harris County's boundaries. It's a regional sort of issue, and it requires a great deal of collaboration and cooperation between multiple governments. And so the relationship between Harris County and the city is, I would tell you, at an all-time high. It's been a joy and a delight to work with Judge Lena Hidalgo and her team. And the city and the county are working very well together. They are moving forward with those 239 projects that will be funded by that $2.5 billion. And then we are leveraging what they are doing with the city's resources and making sure that the needs of the people in Harris County,
yes,
and Houston fits directly in Harris County, that those needs are being met. I had a very good relationship with Judge Ed Emmett. I have a very, very good relationship now with Judge Hidalgo. And I think people are the ones who benefit because when the different governmental units are working well together, the people themselves are benefit. Things are getting done, projects are getting completed, and then we're leveraging dollars from both units for the benefit of the people that live in our respective communities.
Okay, I'm going to switch topics a little
okay.
here. As a radio broadcaster, I love people in their cars. They have a lot of time to listen to the radio.
All right.
However, as you know, and I think you quoted it in the Kinder study, traffic was the number one concern. Back in the State of the City in May, you talked about the Metro vote.
Yes.
And you felt you needed to get that done to get more multimodal,
yes,
is I think the word you used.
Yes.
Is that still the plan?
That is still the plan. Between now and 2040, we're expecting about 4 million people to move into the region. You have to be able to get people from point A to point B. We're entrepreneurs, we're business owners, people who are working. The loss of productivity cost. It costs in terms of getting the work done, and you're not making good use of your time. And so you can't just build and design the city for yesterday. You have to design and build a city for the future. And so what's required now is a paradigm shift, multimodal forms of transportation. People want to be able to get on light rail, a bus rapid transit, or even like commuter rail, or utilize high covered bike lanes. And quite frankly, for many millennials and others, they want a more walkable, pedestrian friendly city, a city where communities are connected. And that's what we're working on. I supported very strongly the Metro Next proposal. Out of the two candidates that was remaining, I'm the only one of the two that supported the Metro Next proposal because it provides all of those different components that are needed. And quite frankly, for senior citizens and people with disabilities, sidewalks, very, very important, okay? Because they need to get from point A to point B.
Yes.
And a part of the Metro Next is providing additional dollars for the construction or the repairing of sidewalks as well. So all of those different components are needed. And quite frankly, when you're an international global city, when people are coming or businesses are expanding, They want to be able to get to point A to point B, and they want to be able to have access to the same sort of transit mobility system that existed in the countries that they come from. Mm-hmm. And so we have to come current, and we have to build and design a transit system for the future, not for yesterday. And as much as I love my car and much as I love my truck, we have to find ways of getting people out of their cars, out of their trucks, and into a system where transit is going faster than your car or your truck.
So on transit, your opponent says, let's make it free. What's your response to that?
Well, you can't make it free. I mean, there are some times when you make it available, when people are going and voting, you make it available and you make it free, things of that nature. There may be some times where there are very special events where it benefits everyone to make it free. But there are very few things that are free these days if you want to build and design a system that works. The bond proposal that just was passed was a $3.5 billion bond proposal. When it's all said and done, it's about a $7 billion package, but you have to pay for those bonds.
Yes. Well, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce certainly supported that.
Yeah.
Speaking of bonds, we've supported the Port of Houston.
Yes.
HISD's bond, speaking of which, I know while the mayor's office doesn't necessarily have the control over HISD, as you mentioned,
yes,
we're trying to recruit businesses.
Yes.
It is a very hot topic
in
this city. We are working with HISD, with TEA,
yes,
entrepreneurs, others, to try to resolve this. If you could wave a wand, you know, what would you do to elevate HISD in the current situation we're under? Because the governor said he's going to put forth a board of managers. So,
right,
so what is the outcome that you would wish for?
Number one, let me start off by thanking the Hispanic Chamber, because you all have been very, very involved and instrumental in the whole educational system and creating an environment that attracts businesses and getting businesses to expand. So let me thank you. I've always said that you can't have a dynamic city moving in one direction and your educational system moving in another. They both have to be moving in the same direction to maximize the potential. That's why when I came into office 4 years ago, I started the Office of Education within the city of Houston. Juliette Stabatch is the director of the Office of Education, and she works with her team directly with the 17 superintendents, 17 school districts that crisscross the city of Houston. She works directly with our colleges and universities and community colleges. And HISD happens to be the largest school district in the state. And of course, it bears Houston's name.
Yes.
So even though the city of Houston doesn't run the Houston Independent School District, when somebody bears your name, many people then, they believe that the mayor and is running the school system, but that's not the case. Mm-hmm. But what I have said is that I'm not seeking to be anybody's superintendent, but we stand ready to partner with any entity, with persons who want to advance quality education for all of our kids in the city of Houston. I stand ready to work with them, to partner with them, to assist in bringing resources to bear, to be a meaningful partner. What I've said to the state is that you have to be very careful on how you proceed, because if you step in and take control of it, then you own it. Uh-huh. And then people are expecting you to produce and have greater results,
yes,
than those who were there before you step in. So my advice is the same advice that Colin Powell gave to President Bush when they were looking at invading Iraq. If you step in, then you own it and it's yours, and the responsibility of you is yours. So I put forth just a cautionary note. Board of managers, okay, fine. But the board of managers have to reflect the diversity of the people within the school district. They have to be sensitive to the communities from which these kids come. Their primary focus has to be the interest of 215,000 kids, okay? And you can't come in thinking you know what's best without having a connection to the communities and to these parents from which these kids come. That's a tall order.
Yes.
Okay? And you have to be very careful how long you're going to stay. So when you come in, even before you come in, you have to know what your objectives are, what you're seeking to achieve, and then people have to understand what your exit strategy. You know, when will you leave and under what conditions will you leave?
Yes.
So I am willing to support anyone, any entity that comes in with good intentions and is interested in educating every child mm-hmm. in the city of Houston. And we have a very diverse community.
Yes.
Okay? And so it doesn't matter where these kids come from. It doesn't matter their language. Okay? It doesn't matter their socioeconomic status. If these board of managers or whomever they may be, if they are interested in educating every single kid, okay, and they're willing to bring the resources, and if they're sensitive to the communities, and if they recognize diversity as an asset and not a liability, then I'm prepared to partner with you. And then we have to be very sensitive and mindful of the teachers, because teachers, parents, the kids, all of them are critical stakeholders, and you cannot govern without taking them in mind. So I'm somewhat in a wait and see position right now, because I know how important education is. I come out of a family where neither one of my parents graduated from high school. My mom was a maid and reared 9 kids by herself. And I know if giving the proper education to these kids, they can grow up and become the mayor of the 4th largest city in the United States. I look forward to working with the Hispanic Chamber and with others, with these teachers, even with the state. The only thing that I would say is that make sure you're coming in for the right reasons, identify what the criteria objectives are, and then please explain to people what your exit strategy will be. Because eventually you want to return the school back to an elected body where people come from the city and come from the very communities. And you can't bring people in from outside of HISD to run HISD.
Thank you.
So we definitely want them to grow up and believe they can be mayor.
Yes.
We also want them to grow up and be very invested in the community in
yes.
which they live.
Yes.
We have a severe voter turnout problem. Still, but between 18 and 45, we can't get people out to vote. Do you have any ideas on how we can get people more engaged, or anything that the two of us can do, or we all can do to engage people?
You have to go to where they are, and you have to speak to the things that are important to them. And you have to invite them to participate. What is it? What do they say? Tu voz es tu voto.
Mm-hmm.
Your vote is your voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is important to be in every community, in every neighborhood, and let people know that they have the power, and they have to exercise their power. And it's not a one and done. You have to constantly mm-hmm. talk to people in these respective communities. Especially, we got to reach out to our millennials,
yes.
and empower them and speak to them. And one of the things that I've tried to do as mayor is bring millennials and that diversity into the power of decision making, because it's important for people to see people around the table of decision making that's reflective of who they are. Okay? That's why, for example, I'm hoping when people see Chief Acevedo as head of the police department, or Chief Sam Pena as head of the fire department, or Julius DePech as head of the Office of Education, they recognize that that didn't happen just on its own, that elections matter, okay? It doesn't just happen because you want it to happen. But when you are exercising your right to vote, then you can elect people that look like you, or elect people who may not look like you, but their DNA is good, okay? And that happens by voting. Elections count, elections matter. Who you put there matter. When people were talking about mass deportation, who's representing you in these positions matter. Are they standing up for you? Even when it's not election time, but are you doing it for the right reason? When we talk about DACA kids, are people out in the trenches? Are they raising their voices? Not at election time, but when it matters to people at their lives at that point in time. That's what matters. So elections matter. When we're talking about rebuilding communities, but doing it in such a way where you're maintaining the history and the culture, mm-hmm. okay? Those things matter. And that's in large part is determined by who's the mayor of the city of Houston, or who's the city council person. We talk about education. Who's your board of trustee? All of those things matter. And so the message that we have to convey to people in our respective communities, that positive things can occur when you exercise your right to vote. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, negative things can occur when you don't exercise your right to vote. So you vote because it's in your best interest. And lastly, what I say to people all the time, if you just see Sylvester Turner's name on the ballot, but you don't see yourself on the ballot, then you're not going to be as motivated to come and vote for Sylvester Turner. But in Sylvester Turner, you have to see your family member, your friend, your street, your community, your interest. And if you see that, then you'll come and vote for Sylvester Turner because you believe that Sylvester Turner is in your best interest. But I, as a person, as a candidate, I have to be able to convey that. And then when you do vote for me, and I'm the, let's say, the mayor, the alcalde right now, that you have to believe is that my very presence made a difference. And if you believe that, then all is good.
Yeah. Well, and on that note, let's assume you get reelected.
Yes.
You've got four more years.
Yeah.
Tell
excited.
Me two things that you would say, you know what, I really want to get these two things done. What would those be?
Well, one is that I want to see a city that's stronger, resilient, and more sustainable. The storms are going to keep coming, okay? But we have to build a city that is where we can mitigate the risk of flooding. Okay, so that's critical. Okay, the other thing is my initiative that I call Complete Communities. There are too many communities and neighborhoods in our cities that have been underserved and under-resourced. Okay, I don't want to see a city, two cities in one of have and have not. Mm-hmm. I want to see a city that, regardless of where you live, you see neighborhoods of promise and opportunity and hope. Okay, where the diversity exists throughout our city. But diversity doesn't mean that when you go to a neighborhood that it's less than any other neighborhood. It simply means it's diverse, it's culturally rich, but it's a neighborhood of promise and opportunity. So regardless of who you are, where you live, what your language may be or your faith, if you are living in our city, then you can succeed and you can do well and you can be this entrepreneur mm-hmm. or the mayor. Or the principal or the teacher. So I don't want two cities in one. I want one city that's highly diverse, but a city that inspires mm-hmm. and a city that welcomes people from all over. But this is your city and we embrace you and we uplift you. Those are two things. A city that can withstand flooding.
Yes.
Okay. And at the same time, a city that's culturally rich and diverse. But at the same time, it doesn't matter where you live. You can do well and will do well and are expected to do well. And whereas a government, we work with you, not against you. Yeah. And as I've said repeatedly in the city of Houston, we don't build walls, we build relationships.
Well, and speaking of which, one issue that is just so important across the country. We recently heard Governor Abbott talking about Austin and
yes.
the homelessness problems there and some particular things that they're piloting to see if they can make a change in it. We heard on NPR report that Houston's homelessness has gone down recently, but yet there's still people out there. They don't want to go to the shelters. They don't
no.
want to go to rehabs. There's all kinds of mental health issues. That seems like such an overwhelming issue. How will you tackle it this next round?
It's a tough issue. If there's one person on our street, it's one person too many. And I will tell you, since 2012, mm-hmm. The city's homeless population has been reduced by 54%. We have housed about 17,000 individuals since 2012. I give a lot of credit to former Mayor Anise Parker, started the initiative. Even under my administration, since I came in 4 years ago, of that 17,000, we've housed about 6,500 to 7,000. The key to homelessness is housing, but not just putting a roof over people's head, because many of the people who are on our street, and right now we have about 3,900, okay, they are experiencing mental behavioral health issues, mm-hmm. Substance abuse issues. So it's not just about providing a roof. You have to provide the wraparound supportive housing mm-hmm. services. And what we know is that 90% of individuals who get the wraparound services, the supportive housing, years later, they are still housed. They are not on the streets. of the city of Houston. Mm-hmm. And you address it one person at a time. Now, the 3,900 that are homeless on our streets, about 1,100 to 1,200 of them are the ones that are literally on the streets. Okay, not in the shelters, but literally on the streets. They are the most difficult ones. And we have about 6 what I call encampments that are around the city of Houston in their tents, things of that nature. And you address them, again, one person at a time. Okay, now, Houstonians are very generous. We want to help. And what I say to Houstonians, be very, very careful. Because if you're bringing mattresses and sofas and chairs, you mean well, but it makes it very, very difficult for us to transition people from the street to a home. And then what ends up happening when it rains, the elements are bad.
Yes.
It leads to contamination.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it really, it impacts even those who are homeless.
Sure.
So on a regular systematic basis, we go out there and we clean up the encampment. We notify, we send notices to those who are out there ahead of time, saying we're coming, we're going to clean up. And we say we're bringing our dumpsters. If you don't want certain things, we'll help you throw them away. If you want to hold on to your items, because these are their items, you may not want them, but these are their possessions. We will say to them during our cleanup, we will store their items and we will house them and we'll give them a ticket and we'll hold on to them for 90 days. And then we tell them you have to move while we come in and clean up the area. It takes about 6 to 8 hours. We bring in our hazmat teams. We clean up the contaminated soil, spruce up the area. And then at the same time, we have our homeless coalition partners working with us and hot teams where we're saying, look, we can provide you with housing. Please take us up on the offer. 10-15% of the time, they will take us up. The others, when we finish the cleanup, they will come right back into the area. But I tell people all the time, it is a complicated issue.
Yes.
Because you just can't move people. Mm-hmm. You can't arrest them. The courts have made it very clear. You cannot criminalize people's status because they are homeless. So you can't do that. It's not about arresting. It's not about moving, taking them from one area, one community, and putting them someplace else. Because, you know, no one wants, you know, in a sense. But I will say to you all the time, it is one thing for me to fix a pothole. I know how to put asphalt down and we can assess and address a pothole by the next business day. It is much more difficult to address people who are walking or living on our streets that have potholes in their lives.
Yes.
These are human beings.
Yes.
And you have to treat them with dignity and respect. And they are not dumb and they know whether or not you care or not. And so you have to exercise a great deal of care and patience, and you have to approach them sometimes 4, 5, 6, 7 times before you can win their confidence to transition them to a better place.
Yes.
Now, in Houston, you know, people are saying, Mayor Allison, we're seeing these encampments. Well, let me just say that for many of these individuals, they have been homeless. They've been there for a long time. But as the city of Houston develops,
yes,
densifies, where they have been, they're now forced out.
Further out, right.
More into the open. But it's not like they haven't been there. But as more development occurs within the city of Houston and the city of Houston densifies, then the trees, the brush, where they used to be, they are forced out more into the open. So now they're under the underpasses,
mm-hmm,
the bridges, more out into various communities. But if you look at LA's homeless population, 35,000-37,000.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego, Seattle, New York has well over 50,000. Dallas has more homeless than we have.
Denver.
Okay. So, but it's one of those situations. It's going to take all of us working collaboratively.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you that the federal resources dealing with the wraparound services for the homeless population, the federal resources, those numbers have been going down.
Yeah.
And so it is causing for more dollars, more resources to come from the local level.
Yes.
In order to provide the wraparound services to address the homeless population. But we're dealing with it in a very intentional way. There are 100 homeless coalition partners in the city of Houston, all under the umbrella of the Way Home. And we will not stop until we reduce that homeless population, hopefully, you know, down to zero. That's the ultimate goal. But you certainly want to be very intentional on it. And it's gonna take some time.
Before Sarah closes out with some questions she has, I'll just have one more for you.
Sure.
And that's the elephant in the room.
What's that?
Firefighters. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of misinformation. How will that be resolved? What's your thought on that?
Well, you know, firefighters do an exceptional job. Let me be very clear on that. Mm-hmm. I have 21,000, City of Houston has 21,000 employees. Firefighters do an exceptional job, police, our municipal workers. And the way we've worked out the labor agreements, employment agreements, we sit down at the table and we work them out. Municipal workers come to the table, we negotiate an agreement, and we've been successful at that. Mm-hmm. Police, they come to the table, and police are hard negotiators. Hard negotiators. Fuss and fight, but at the end of the day, they never leave a dollar on the table, okay? But we work it out, negotiate it. The same thing, the same sort of dynamics needed, for example, with fire. They do an exceptional job. I believe in collective bargaining. I supported collective bargaining for the Houston Police in 2005 in the legislature, advocated for it and voted for it. Still believe in collective bargaining.
Yes.
And that's coming to the table and negotiating on an agreement. And they are deserving of a pay raise that the city can afford. Just like I would say police are deserving of a pay raise that the city can afford. Municipal workers are deserving of a pay raise that the city can afford. And so it's my hope that people will return to the bargaining table and recognize that it's a give and take process.
Yes.
But it has to be one that the taxpayers, that the taxpayers can afford. We are fortunate to have a fire chief like Chief Sam Pena, who is very committed to the fire department and to all 4,000 firefighters, and very committed to the city of Houston. I trust his leadership, and I simply hope that people will be willing to work it out. But it can't be a win-lose. It has to be a win-win.
Yes.
So I'm optimistic.
Good.
And we'll see how it unfolds.
Well, I know we're all very hopeful, and we understand the importance of this election. And so we're going to remind everyone to please get out there, make sure you vote. And again, that is December 14th. We can't encourage you enough. Learn more about the candidates. We have gone out of our way to make sure that we provide this information to you all. It's up to you to make your decision. Mayor, I know Sarah's going to come back to these questions.
These are important because we are radio, right? So we've asked very serious questions. But our listeners really want to know who you are as a human being.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
So this is the fun part.
So these are easy. So this is just right off the cuff. Your first reaction. Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Your chief characteristic?
Patient.
Your favorite qualities in friends?
Trustworthiness.
Your biggest flaw?
Well, you know, it's going to contradict in many ways what I said the first. Patient, but I like results sooner rather than later.
Your idea of happiness?
Contentment.
Your favorite hero of fiction?
Of fiction? Hercules.
Your favorite heroes in real life?
My favorite heroes in real life. To really, on a personal note, that will always be my mom and dad.
What is your present state of mind?
I'm very much at peace with where things are.
And your favorite motto?
And that's the one that my mom instilled in all 9 of her kids. Tomorrow will always be better than today.
Very nice.
On that note, thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us today, and we look forward to seeing you all at chamber events and listening to Intercom Radio. Our thanks to Mayor Sylvester Turner. Sarah, thank you.
Get out to the polls and vote. Voting is open now.
And you know, Dr. Maria, you and Sarah can't tell you who to vote for, but if they could, they would tell you to vote for Sylvester Turner.
Have a great day. Thanks a lot for watching.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.